Shalom. Good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Lenny.
Shalom, John.
Well, welcome back into the studio. And we would like to continue from where we left off. I think we were just going to talk about your various professions, the things that you studied for, and why and how did you manage all this in one lifetime?
Yeah, well, basically, a lot of it was just opportunistic, doing what you can to get by. It's really as simple as that. So at 2 years old, coming from a family of social activists, I wanted to make a difference and make the world a better place. I used the expression, I wanted to save the world. And I also knew that I was good at technical stuff, so I wanted to be a scientist. And my father wanted me to go to political economy and politics and stuff, but I was more interested in
science.
Yeah. Because, well, the thing is that, as I think I told you, that we used to read his university textbooks on political economy. He would debate with me articles in the Wall Street Journal and debate Nietzsche and Kant and Feuerbach and Engels with me.
You had enough vocabulary to debate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was a rather precocious kid.
Obviously.
I used to read the dictionary for fun and stuff like that because it was just fun. I hate small pocket dictionaries because if it's that small, I probably won't need it. So at two, being a two-year-old, I kind of liked archaeology and dinosaurs, and that's kind of come back to me in the recent years, but that's another story. I'll come back to that later.
Mm-hmm.
So then after a little bit, around 5 years old, I started getting into chemistry, which is why when we were left with no food in the house, my brothers and sisters brought me a candy wrapper and said, can you make one of these? I basically went to my university chemistry textbooks that I've been reading for fun and looked up chemical equivalents and basically checked what was all the ingredients were and figured out how I could sort of try to do the chemistry of making a candy bar. It came out really badly, but it did inspire me to start reading cookbooks as well, and I learned to cook really well within the next few weeks. So my brothers and sisters were happy that they ate better then. But I was interested in chemistry, and certainly organic chemistry and things like that were fascinating to me.
And did you follow that through?
I kind of petered out. I guess around 7 or 8 years old, I got more interested in physics, especially nuclear physics. And I studied...
Was there any adult who encouraged you in all this on the wide range that you were looking at?
No. No. My grandparents and my father would occasionally buy the textbooks for me. Other than that, no, I just did it on my own.
And they just accepted that you could do all this.
Yeah, I was just a funny kid. I did whatever I wanted to do, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's just Lenny. Don't worry about it. There's not much you can do about it. He's going to do it anyway. I became fascinated with this concept of nuclear fusion. And the thing that troubled me about nuclear fusion is that it was so hot that it would vaporize iron. And it would... There was nothing that could contain nuclear fusion, so I worked on studying properties of matter and various forces and came up with this idea of using a magnetic bottle and a cyclotron. And I was so angry when I found out that somebody had already developed a cyclotron. No, seriously. I mean,
they beat you to it.
They beat me to it. I was so angry that I had come up with a really good idea. I was going to build a cyclotron. And they'd already done it, and so I got very frustrated and I gave up on nuclear physics. Mind you, my brother Carl and I, we used to sit and... one of the things we did is we were reading Einstein and we were trying to build three-dimensional models of four-dimensional space and do fun things like that just for fun. So that was the kind of thing that we liked to do when I was an eight-year-old kid. At about 10, I started going from there into biology and got into marine biology.
And by that time you were at school as well.
Oh, I was at school from when I was five. Right. Actually, I was at school from when I was two, because between two and four, I got sent to a private Jewish school. That was
by your grandparents.
Actually, by my father and my first mother.
Right.
Yeah, so before they, until they got divorced, I was being sent to a private Jewish day school for a while. It was great fun. I love that. I love that. I still have great memories of building a helicopter out of these big cardboard blocks. Yeah, it's cool. And so I guess I got into biology and then marine biology, and Jacques Cousteau was really big at that time, and I really was inspired by that. But I was a very poor swimmer. I can swim, but I didn't feel I was a strong enough swimmer, that I was comfortable enough in the ocean, that that was a place where that was really for me. So I got into plants and botany. And I guess around, I guess 10 or 11, I started moving into the botany and plant science. And my grandfather was an avid gardener, and that provided a really good platform for me to do that. And I discovered George Washington Carver. And George Washington Carver was a real inspiration for me. Just so much about him. His coming up from out of slavery to getting himself an education, figuring out that if he put a middle name on his name, that that would get him, you know, that get his post delivered, because black people didn't have middle names, and they didn't, they just would not bother delivering his post. And, you know, little things like that just really, really inspired me about him. And then his absolute practicality of just solving problems and getting on with getting things done was really, again, very inspirational. He did a lot of things. And when one of the things that he did is he started working at a place called Tuskegee University, which is a place, a university for, that was one of the only places where black people could get a degree back then. And they needed buildings. So he ran a course in how to make bricks out of the native local mud. And then he ran a course in building design. And then he ran a course in courses in construction. And basically his students built the buildings. And one of the first buildings that he built, Huntington Hall, when it was demolished, I managed to get one of the bricks sent to me.
Why was it demolished?
The building was no longer safe. It had to come down. And but I managed to get one of the bricks with his fingerprints in it. Well, actually, I don't know that it has his personal fingerprints. It might be just his students' fingerprints. But one of the bricks with either his or his students or both's fingerprints in that brick, I have sitting in my house. It's one of my prized possessions from that hall. So he was a real big inspiration. I wanted to go on and study plant genetics. And
how did you fit into school with these?
I didn't fit in anywhere. In high school, I remember in chemistry class, I slept in the back of class. And when the teacher got stuck and was having difficulty with something, I would wake up and help him out.
That couldn't have made you popular.
In fifth grade, we didn't have a science teacher. The government had this program where they paid for these new schools for slum kids. And we had this amazing science lab. And no science teacher in fifth grade. So fifth grade is about 10 years old. Okay? 9 or 10 years old. And so I was very angry and I complained to the school. The school basically said, yeah, well, you're so concerned, you teach the class. So I did. And I spent a few weeks researching a textbook and went through the supplies. And
with
started,
kids of your own age?
Yes, teaching my peers.
And
science.
Did they accept it?
they basically... I had difficulty managing the behavioral issues in the class. There was too much parity in the age there. And I did not really have the experience to manage that. And I like to say that I was the worst fifth grade teacher ever, science teacher ever. But I apparently did a good enough job that they asked me to teach third grade science. And for that, they thought I was amazing.
So the age difference made a difference.
The age difference made a difference. And the school was so impressed with how thorough and how carefully I had put the program together that they actually asked me to come back and teach third grade science as a fifth grader. So that was kind of fun. So I mean, how did I interact with school? That should give you an idea. Okay. So
that was primary school.
That's primary school.
And then did you just go on to, could you have a choice of high schools? Or?
No, you didn't have a choice of high schools. I went to several high schools because we moved around and I just went where we went. Mm. And You know, I wound up graduating from Uxbridge High School in Massachusetts, which was not too bad, and went off to university at Rutgers University in New Jersey.
And you got scholarships to go to university?
I got scholarships and financial aid because I was very bright and very poor, which is a good combination if you want people to throw money at you for university.
And you said that there were people slept in dormitories, so you lived
right.
in.
So in the U.S., it's considered preferable that you live residential in the university.
So what did you choose as your first subject to study at university?
Well, I came in wanting to do plant genetics, like my hero, George Washington Carver. And I should back up a little bit because I did a lot of different jobs. You asked me about the professions that I had and the things that I studied. So obviously when I was 6 years old and I first started working, I started a company. I didn't really form a company per se, but I mean I went out working for myself as just doing yard work and house cleaning and wound up getting jobs, paper delivery. I worked as a shoeshine boy on a corner in front of a shopping strip mall. I did a fair bit of work in construction. And my grandfather taught me a lot of things about construction because I would help him, and then I would go out and get jobs working for other people, just doing what I could. I could basically, I wound up being trained as a carpenter, as a mason, as a brick, as a plumber, as an electrician. And in high school, they had a special program for kids who wanted to go become electricians, and you could do your electrician certification. So I did that. I did the whole course in high school. It's just for on a laugh, and you know,
useful to have.
Yeah. So I basically learned the trade properly, and not just being taught on the job, which I did also, but actually getting a proper certification to be an electrician. I learned to be a roofer. You know, if there's something
this is
involved,
all at high school they let you that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I did some work in automotive. I wound up getting a job working at pit crew for a motorcycle racing team, which was a lot of fun. And we had a lot of fun playing on the racetrack, the practice track out behind the garage, because you get to, you know, practice doing stunt driving.
So you didn't do academic subjects, you did practical
subjects. This is in high school before going to university.
Yeah.
These are other things that I did. I picked up a job doing fur trapping for a while, which I think I mentioned to you. I worked as a short order cook. Every kid works as a short order cook, and I worked my way up from, you know, preparing ice creams to working on the fryers and the grill to where I wound up working as a chef in a steakhouse. It was a really interesting steakhouse because I worked kind of like the late night shift, and they had a brothel and an illegal casino in the basement. Yes, so it was a good place for a high school kid to be working. Just realizing that my daughter is actually at the age now when I was working in a brothel. And I was talking to her about how when I was your age, I was working in a brothel, young lady.
Doing the cook.
As a cook, yes. I was working in the steakhouse upstairs from the brothel. But interesting conversation to have with your 15-year-old daughter.
So what did you, when you had a choice of going to university, what subject did you choose to qualify in so that you would have a profession?
I originally wanted to study plant genetics, and they had a course called plant breeding, which I looked at, and I decided that to research what thing to major in university, the best person to ask, I was getting conflicting information, and I decided the best person to ask is the person who's going to pay me. So instead of listening to all the counselors and other good, well-meaning people who were telling me what I should major in, I went to the employment office and I read stacks and stacks of employment ads for people in plant genetics. And what I found out was if you had a degree in plant breeding, that you were qualified to work as somebody basically filling pots in a nursery, flower pots in a nursery, and that you weren't going to do anything any genetics or anything meaningful ever in your life, not for money. And if you wanted to do something actually in plant genetics, you had to have a PhD. So I went and said, okay, what do you need to get into the PhD programs? Well, you have to major in something like biochemistry or botany. And if you major in plant breeding, basically none of the graduate schools want to look at you. So you won't get a PhD if you get there, if you do that. I this wound up starting a big argument between me and the deans, where I basically said, got upset with them. Why were they having degree programs that were completely useless? And they argued that, well, students want them. I said, well, that's not a good answer, because students actually want to do something with these degrees, and you're putting out degrees that are going to be dead ends for their careers. Anyway, got me a lot. It actually eventually won me some friends in the university. But I wound up doing a declared major in botany, and I took all the courses for a major in, because the Rutgers did not allow you to declare a second or third major, but I did all the courses for a second and third major in biochemistry, pre-med medical biochemistry, and genetics. I wound up
That's quite a cocktail.
Well, I wound up getting in trouble with the deans again, because there's a certain number of credit hours of courses that you're allowed to take when you pay your annual tuition. That gives you essentially unlimited courses, as much as you want to take.
Mm.
Not quite. There's a limit. I went over the limit. And then they called
me. Did you have the time?
Oh, no. Basically, because a lot of the classes, I took so many classes that my classes were overlapping. So I would have friends take notes for me, and I would skip the lecture and just do it outside and read their notes later, and skip the other class for an exam. So I did a lot of that. The deans made an exception for me. What they did is they moved some of my classes to summer school. They said, yeah, we'll just call it summer school so you don't have to pay extra for the other classes.
they encouraged you.
They supported me, yeah. They kind of liked the fact that I was just out there and in a positive way.
So you got your professional degree in?
So my Bachelor of Science was in genetics, in botany, with an undeclared but fulfilled major in medical biochemistry and genetics.
And you followed that up with?
Actually, one of the genetics lectures that I did, the year that I had met the prerequisites, the lecturer was on sabbatical. So I did it by correspondence with him. that's how totally nutcase I was.
So it started at correspondence school, but so you emerged.
I emerged
with a PhD.
I emerged with a bachelor's degree from that, and I went to the University of California for a PhD. And at the University of California, I started out in a master's program, and after a little ways into the master's program, basically they decided that I was not master's material. They just said, just go do a PhD, and they said, we'll shift all your courses over there and just finish, do a PhD. So I wound up doing a PhD in genetics, molecular genetics. I should also add, in my bachelor's degree, there was one really exciting story. I wound up getting into an honors scholar research program, and I was assigned a major professor to guide me in some research on plant genetics, who happened to be Dr. Ovid Shifras, an Israeli, another Jewish inspiration in my life. And he, while I was working for him, was called to Europe to accept an award for having invented the concept of the hybrid. So people think of hybrids as being ancient technology. Mm-hmm. But actually, Dr. Shifras was an older professor. He was pretty much emeritus at that point, and I was one of the last students he was taking on. And he had started out in his early education being inspired by the fact that they had just discovered Gregor Mendel's work. Remember, Gregor Mendel's work was done in the late 1800s. It was rediscovered around the end of World War I. That discovery inspired a young Ovid Shifras, who wound up making a career in plant genetics and using those principles to invent this radical new concept called the hybrid, which we take for granted now as being old school genetics. And he was my major professor, and we did this research together on, we were trying to transfer genes between species. So what the thing that people call genetic engineering, where you transfer a single gene from one species into an unrelated, completely different species. Not a different variety, but a different species. And so we did that successfully, one gene at a time being moved between species with old-fashioned breeding techniques, the kind of stuff that's been done for thousands or tens of thousands of years. And we had a lot of fun with that, and there's lots of good stories about the plant genetics that I did with him. And I learned a lot from him. Then from there, I went to get my PhD and wanted to learn molecular genetics. I went to the University of California. I wrote my PhD on cloning and sequencing of the tomato phenylalanine ammonia lyase. And I was basically...
It's a mouthful.
Whatever. I was interested in... I was interested in the in plant-pathogen interaction. And so I was looking at how you get... how a plant defends itself against diseases. And we've had the one disease where we could completely separate the symptoms from the infection. So you could modify the organism to make a symptomless infection. And that way you could study the plant's response in the absence of being complicated by the symptoms of the disease, which was quite an interesting thing. And part of the response was turning on a set of genes, the major one of which was phenylalanine ammonia lyase. Hence, that's why I cloned that thing, and to sequence it and understand it better. I got to publish papers on rather profound things like how to extract DNA from a plant when that was actually a meaningful thing to publish. How to clone plants from cells when that was a meaningful thing to publish.
And then they went on to do it with animals.
Right. But these are the kinds of things where when I was starting out, this is the early days of this biotech stuff, and those were
the general publications. Still in America.
Oh, yeah. And so the... during my PhD, I also started dancing more professionally. And I was taking a dance class and a ballet class, and some scouts noticed me, and I started getting offered jobs.
In ballet,
while I was a graduate student. And I went to my ballet teacher, and I asked, "What do I do?" He said, "You dance." And he taught me how to audition, so I went. I told the scouts that I didn't want to work for them unless I auditioned, because I didn't trust that they knew that I was as good as they thought I was. I couldn't imagine I was as good as they thought I was. So I went in and I auditioned, and I remember after listening to what my dance trainer told me to do, he said, "You know, just remember, it's really all about the ballerina. It's great." So I go in there and I take company class with the company, and then they introduce me to the prima ballerina, and we do a couple of things together. I say, "Right, what do you like to do?" She says, "I like turns." I said, "Great. How many pirouettes can you do?" She said, "3. "Great. With me, you'll do 5. "But I can't do 5. I said, "With me, you will do 5. And I showed her what I wanted her to do. She did 5 pirouettes with me. She ran over, because it was an assisted pirouette. If you know what you're, if a dancer knows what he's doing, the ballerina will do a little bit more than she could do on her own. Okay, she did 5. She basically was so excited she ran away from me, wrapped her arms around the director and said, "I don't care what he wants, I want him." And that's how I got my first job as a dancer.
And what happened to the studies in the meantime?
Oh, well, remember, I don't sleep. I did everything. So I would dance 30, 40 hours a week and study 50, 60, 80 hours a week. And that's just what I did. And
how long could you keep that up?
I don't know anything else.
Because
I've never known anything else. Remember, when I was in grammar school, I would get up before dawn to work my paper routes and my trapping lines, come home, make porridge for the family, get everyone out of bed, get everyone off to school, come home from school, go to my job, go to my second job, go to my third job. Around 2 a.m., I'd get home and go to sleep. And that's how I got through school and high school stuff. When I was in university, I slept 2 hours a night so I could study and do my work, do my whatever I needed to do. And to this day...
Didn't affect your health at all?
I'm a mess. Can't you see that? I'm sure it did. But anyway, so I did everything. And yes, so I wound up dancing, and I wound up getting leading man roles for a lot of the regional companies. And when the international companies came through town, I would get supporting roles for a lot of them. So I wound up dancing with some amazing companies. I mean, just unbelievable. It's such a privilege to be able to say that I danced with the Joffrey.
Well, Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, and then the list goes on. The National Dance Company of Senegal, the National Dance Company of Puerto Rico, the National Dance Company of Scotland, the National Dance Company. And just it goes on and on.
You did classical?
Classical ballet.
Classical ballet.
Yeah.
And not the modern.
Or whatever I was choreographed to do. I just did what I was told. My strength was, I mean,
Being able to lift, when you only had two hours sleep, you have to lift a ballerina.
I could do lifts with ballerinas that no one else could do. There's a special lift that Rudolf Nureyev did it's the bedroom scene in Romeo and Juliet. And it requires a tremendous amount of strength. And in the video, if you ever watch it, he cheats it and doesn't cheat on it. Because it requires that much strength and it's too hard. And I did it straight without the cheat because I had just that much strength. Wasn't as good a dancer as Nureyev, but I did have some things I could do. Anyway, so I got my PhD in molecular genetics. And
when did you start earning a living with your professional qualifications?
So from my PhD, I got a job at Michigan State University, research faculty. And that's where I went in 1991. And again, working on various other aspects of molecular genetics, the first working on a project for looking at starch synthase. And we were doing site-directed mutagenesis and biochemical analysis to modify the active allosteric regulatory sites and the protein, the substrate binding domains, with turning them, making them stronger and weaker, not just knocking them out. It was also complicated because it's a heterotetramer protein, and no one had ever gotten a heterotetramer assembled in vitro before. And I went in there and basically said, I can do it, but I need to do it. I need this, this, and this, and I need to do it this way. And I pissed off everybody because they told me that's not the way they do things. I said, I don't care. Maybe that's why you're not getting it done. I want that, and I'll do it that way. And lo and behold, I got it on the first try. And they hated me even more. So then I went on to work with another group called on DNA binding proteins in cold response in plants, and did more work on getting things to work that nobody else could do, and having a lot of fun at it. And taking a job at a biotech company in New Zealand.
Is that when you decided to come to New Zealand?
Well.
But that's for the next program.
I decided I wanted to get a proper job because the job that I was in was not a tenure track job. It was a short term research position, and I wanted a proper long term job. And this opportunity came up in New Zealand, and I thought that sounded like a bit of fun.
And so that's where you came to New Zealand on your own?
With my wife.
Oh, you already had the wife in.
Yes. Yeah, I married my university sweetheart. We met at university and fell in love, and yeah, we haven't gotten tired of each other yet.
So. Thank you very much, Lenny, and we'll continue this story in the next program, and it is quite fascinating, and I hope that you're enjoying reliving those moments. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10 to Radio Shalom on 104.6 FM. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.